Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here for you. And we are here at the Justice Club as well on part two. But first, we enter into the world of authors and experts. And we have a dynamic author for you today and poet and educator. And so I hope it's a beautiful day in your neighborhood because it's a beautiful day in our neighborhood right here on the West Coast in California, sunny California, I might add. And I want to tell you that we are so excited to have a dynamic guest in the world of authors and experts today. And it's Dr. Jamila J. Pomoja Thomas. That is a mouthful, but that is her real name, Dr. Jamila J. Pomoja Thomas. And she is an author, a freelance writer, and educator. And she will share her struggles as a woman and how she overcame those struggles and made her dreams come true. On part two of the Justice Club, I will share the information about disinformation and explore why I believe it is unconstitutional, illegal, unlawful, as the consumer advocate for justice who has written about it, starting with Fight Back, Legal Abuse, published in 2010, that was seen and featured around the world. And so today, I am going to discuss people who provide disinformation, misinformation themselves, and are now going to spy on you and target you for misinformation and disinformation. But, you know, truly, that all results in personal opinion when you really think about it, because the First Amendment guarantees freedom of speech. Thank God for that. So let me tell you a little more about our fantastic guest. She wrote a breathtaking memoir about a woman clutched by depression and anxiety in the rut of being a stay-at-home mom. And after attaining her final degree, she leaves her survivalist spouse, becoming a doctor of English. I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Pedagogy, we'll ask her, from Murray State University. And this is a story of grueling survival and emergence of a new persona who has a will to let go of the past and turn a new leaf with a new beginning. That is very exciting indeed, because most of us experience some depression, some anxiety, some frustration, and others suffer a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression and a lot of frustration. And there's sometimes no one to go to seek counseling or help or direction or guidance or understand what that person is actually going through. Her book is entitled The Revolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. And it is going to be exciting because I also wrote poetry as a child, which led me to writing articles and that were actually published in newspapers, to my surprise, and led on to writing more books. So this is very intriguing to me. Find someone with the same common interest as a child growing up and leading to writing books and educating and going on with her life in a positive way and achieving success. So let me tell you about her endorsements. Retka Walkup says, Abundance Mindset. This book shows how reality is bigger than dreams, and small dreams can hold you back. Being someone else would have belittled Jamila, and she's so much bigger than anyone can possibly dream of her. What a beautiful quote. And Trishina Bell writes, quote, there's a lot to this woman. She has much left to give and do in life, being seen and not heard until now. And again, another comment by Tashiana Sauls Shanklin says, quote, are you trembling? One of my favorite lines from the poem Curriculum Vitae, seeing her accomplish so much, and she wasn't even at her full capacity. And that is so exciting to have people make such beautiful comments about a wonderful person. And the cover, her photo is absolutely stunning. I have to compliment her on her photo of her book, The Revolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. So I'm anxious to talk to Jamila, Dr. Jamila, and let's get started. So let's take a break. When we come back, we will enter into the world of authors and experts, and it is quite a wonderful world to be in, and we hope that you will not touch that dial, because we will be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
blogtalkradio.com/Columbo Chronicles, a live podcast adding the Justice Club, coming to Columbo Chronicles every day at 12 noon to 12:30. Grab a snack and a smoothie and sit back and find out what the lawyers don't want you to know. Be sure to push the like, follow, and share buttons and bookmark blogtalkradio.com/Columbo Chronicles.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because this is the Rose, and the Rose is now entering into the world of authors and experts with our fantastic guest, Dr. Jamila J. is also her nickname, Pamoja Thomas. And I'm going to spell that for you, so if you're looking for her book, you will get it correct. It's Dr. Dr. J-A-M, like Mary, I-L-A, Pamoja, P like Paul, A-M like Mary, O-J-A dash Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S. And again, the name of the book is The Evolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. So let's walk. Well, I'm going to call her Dr. J with her approval. And so let's get started. And let's say hello to Dr. J. Hi, Dr. J. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm really eager to spend time with you all today.
Well, we're happy to have you here because we have things in common. I was reading about you enjoying poetry as a child, which I also did because I was an introvert. And then I started writing little articles and led to books and blah, 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 blah. But you have an exciting story, and you put it in a memoir. And I also want to tell you that I actually, because I know that you admire Maya Angelou and her poetry, and you're going to be a little heartbroken when I tell you that I actually got to hear her recite a poem at a World Poetry Conference where I won an award, and she was the guest speaker.
Oh,
and she recited her poetry. It was very exciting.
I know so it was. I'm getting chills right now. I know. That was an amazing experience. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Well,
and
I'm
so
happy you had that opportunity.
Yes, I did, and it was a very exciting opportunity, too. And so let's talk about you, the evolution of me. What on earth would cause you, a beautiful woman, I love your photo on your book.
Thank you.
It's very beautiful.
Thank you.
And I was just wondering, what would inspire you to write a memoir and share your struggles?
I came to the conclusion that my story needed to be shared for multiple reasons, but to some extent, I was already writing it and didn't know I was writing it because I was just, when I write poetry, I write it the moment that I feel it. I am led spiritually when I write. So when I sit down and write, especially when it's poetry, it's at that moment, whatever thoughts come to my mind, I just use the words as paint and create some type of portrait, which ends up being poetry. And so I was writing it during the time, some of the poems I saw, even some of the prose when I was maybe in college, and I saw some from during different moments when I was married. But I was driven to write even more and actually get it published after my mother died. So my mother died, and I learned not long after that I would be going through a divorce. And so my editor is someone I confided in very much so, and a best friend of mine. I would share my poetry to between the both of those. I really don't think I had another choice, Rose, because, you know, after sharing it with my editor and my best friend, I went to my father, I went to my bonus mom, whom you know, Dr. Topsana Thomas. A few other instrumental people, she is a beautiful, beautiful soul. And so a few other instrumental people in my circle, I shared the book with, shared parts of the poetry with them, and it was settled that I was writing my next book. And so it's been very therapeutic, to be honest. It's been utilized for myself as a resource for me to just as for therapy. And so because of seeing the things that I've gone through, the different views that I had for motherhood initially prior to becoming a mother and then actually being a mother and then going through the journey of a divorce, I just really felt, hey, people need to know this so people can be reminded that they're human when they feel these types of feelings.
Yes, I read that you suffered from depression and anxiety, which millions of people do. And when did that start? Was it in your childhood or did it continue in your adulthood? How did in your teen years, what happened?
Well, in my teen years, I was diagnosed with anemia. And so, but by the time that I became an adult, I was diagnosed with being severe anemic. And so around 2015, I was diagnosed with recurrent depression and generalized anxiety. And so the reason why I bring up the anemic aspect is because anemia has some regard towards people that are diagnosed with depression as well as anxiety. And so because the blood and oxygen is being transported and struggling with being transported to get properly to your brain. And so for myself, in conjunction with me experiencing different trauma in my life, I reached a point in my life that I wanted everything to end. And, you know, I'd been working, trying to just get the depression and anxiety to get better. But the medicine, the counseling, the fitness regimen, me eating healthy, everything I was doing to help me was more of like a head-on collision, because it crashed, escorting me to this dark place. And I ended up at Teachford Hospital facing, you know, dealing with the death of my mother, dealing with the fact that I was going through the divorce, dealing that the children that, because I have four children, and I'd been a stay-at-home mom for 20 years. And so with the divorce, my children were no longer living with me. And so my identity had also been stolen. My family life I lived for over 20 years was really a lie. And I couldn't mentally adjust to what I was learning. So I needed a higher emergent to help me recalibrate myself. And so it took me months, even after medical procedures, because I still was, you know, I still been still going through the divorce and also still going through the health factor with the anemic. So my physical health was steady declining, but I can say every step that I took from being in the hospital, the intensive therapy, medication, exercise, daily meditations, daily affirmations, self-soothing, I mean, aromatherapy, weekly massages. You know, I have spiritual family, the support of my biological family. All that with the extended, these people helped me to recover, and they are still helping me to recover because I was a mess. I was a complete mess, but shattered, but gracefully I've been healing. And so it's having depression is a huge struggle, because so many people look at it as somebody, when someone says to another person, many people in our society just respond as if I'm saying, oh, I have a cold. And it's actually much deeper than that. So,
yes, it's much deeper than that. I agree with you. And I think that depression is something that an individual sometimes hides, right?
Yeah, because I hid mine for years. I hid mine for years. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to my bonus mom, which is Dr. T, and I remember during the time of being married and being diagnosed with depression, and I remember how she stressed so much for me to focus on myself. She was focusing so much on stressing for me to spend time with myself. And I, you know, I didn't really want to admit that I was depressed, even though I had a diagnosis that said I was depressed, because in my mind, I was reacting the way society did. Like, I was just sad, and it's like, oh, it's a cold, it'll be over within a week or so. But my bonus mom was doing so much to try to help me stay in this positive lane to get me out of that rut. But I promise you, it was very challenging, because admitting to myself that I was depressed. And so that made it more challenging for me, because I wasn't coming to terms that I was depressed. And since going through the journey of the divorce, I have been able to face the fact that, okay, I am truly going through depression. This is not something I can turn off and on with a switch. I have to truly buckle down and pay attention to everything so that I can overcome this, so that I can learn how to journey through life and be the victorious a woman that I know that I am.
Yes, because just having depression and then the divorce and you have children involved, it is extremely tough sometimes when the divorce isn't horrendous, but when the divorce gets horrendous, in some cases it gets worse, and then it just continues, and then you have the financial. I mean, there's so many aspects to a divorce people don't realize. Sometimes it's better for people to stay together. Like till the kids grow up, I guess.
But you know,
basically, the depression is like, the depression, though, is like sometimes we don't realize we're even depressed. Is that right?
Right. Yes. That's what it was. I remember telling my doctor that I thought I was just mourning. I said, well, I just thought it was grief. And I remember one time, so I fainted one time. This was not facing the fact that I'm going through depression. I fainted one time, and I was at the hospital, and my hematologist said, well, Jamila, why didn't you come to the doctor before? And I said, well, I thought it was just grief. And she said, no, this is actually a lot deeper than that. Your iron saturation is extremely low, and you're extremely sad because oxygen is not being transported to your brain properly. So she said, we have to focus on these different regimens to get your iron properly back at the levels that it needs to be. And so I remember being in therapy, and when I was in a group therapy at this time. And so there was a person, she was speaking, a doctor, she was speaking, and she said, how many of you know that depression is a mental illness? And I was so silent. I was so silent because I didn't know if it was a trick or not. I was like, is this a trick question?
A trick question.
Right. So she said, well, let me show you why depression is a mental illness. And I said, I immediately interrupted. I said, wait. First you said, how many of us know depression is a mental illness? And now you're saying you're going to show us that it's a mental illness? When did depression become a mental illness? And she looked at me because I had been quiet. I had not been saying too much of anything because I was depressed. Even though I'm going to group therapy, I wasn't at a point that I wanted to talk. But when that question was proposed, it became to my awareness that depression and general analyzed anxiety, PTSD, all of these are mental illnesses. And I just was in such shock because I said, all these years that I've been covering it up, all these years, because even when I would be depressed, you know, even prior to my mother dying, I started realizing that my depression was further back. And because I was diagnosed in 2015 that I was depressed, but my mother died in 2018. And so in 2020, I started going down the journey of a divorce. And so to realize that, hey, in 2015, I was actually diagnosed, but not really know that it was a mental illness as of why I was in such of a rut. And so that means I wasn't getting the proper care.
Yes, and I think that's a very important point for you to bring up because I think, you know, we all get depressed, but most people will pull out of it, but millions don't. And so I think, you know, that we're not recognizing it as a mental illness when people don't pull out of it. And we're just saying, well, she'll feel better if we, you know, if we just take her to a movie or maybe if we make her laugh or whatever, you know, and because the average person doesn't understand it. And so when you go to a group where that's what they're focusing on, mm-hmm. and you're not under pressure to answer any questions, but you're just listening. And all of a sudden, somebody says something or asks a question, and it sparks your brain, and you're like, hey, wait a minute. What does she mean by mm-hmm. that? Is that me? And then you start to begin to ask questions like you did, which is a positive thing to do, right?
Yes, it is. It's a very positive thing to do. And it was very scary to do. But I think one of the things that helped me to put my guard down was I didn't know any of these people I was in the room with. I didn't know anyone. So I'm in group therapy, but I don't know anyone. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to be judged. And if they do judge me, who cares? They don't know me. I don't know them. And we're going to go on about our merry way. See, the first time I was told that I had a problem, it was when I was pregnant with my first child. Came pregnant with my first child. I was working as a reporter, an investigative reporter in Dallas, Texas. And I was so excited because I was in college, just almost finished with my bachelor's degree. And the publisher, I go into the office, tell the editor I'm pregnant. I tell the publisher I'm pregnant, and I'm happy because I was originally told I could never have children. So this is a miracle blessing. This is like the biggest gift in the world to have a baby within my womb. And so the publisher writes me a letter and fired me and told me I was handicapped. And I was like, wait, what? And so that was very devastating, it was a distraught situation for me. And so by the time, you know, pushing forward to, because that was in 2000, and so by 2015, hearing that I'm diagnosed with depression, still hard to be upfront and tell other people that this is what I'm dealing with, because I was still having a hard time with the fact that I was even told I was handicapped just because, you know, with being pregnant. Do I think I was handicapped because I was pregnant? Absolutely not. But it was embarrassing. It was a traumatic experience for me.
And it's discriminatory against women and babies, say the least.
Absolutely.
I mean, if mothers didn't have babies, your editor wouldn't be alive.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was the publisher that told me that. And that's why
the publisher.
Because I'm like, how did you get in this world? Your mother become handicapped the moment? Well, maybe, I don't know, from the way that you're talking.
You know, the words people don't sometimes realize, words hurt, right? And when you're a child, they get filed in your brain somewhere, and it causes people to react in a negative way because that person said something that affected you, and it gets filed in your brain, and it does affect us as we're growing up sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes there's mm-hmm. certain things that happen or they say, and something like that mm-hmm. you didn't forget, and it wouldn't be forgettable. Yeah. It's forgivable, but it's not forgettable is the problem with all these negative words that people use against other people. And so, you know, there's no sensitivity there and no sanctity of life feelings and no sanctity for motherhood and so forth. And that's getting it's getting rarer today, actually. But anyway, I truly believe in the sanctity of motherhood and the sanctity of life, and I'm with you. It's a gift from God, and we need babies in order to become children, in order to become adults and preserve our mm-hmm. nations. And so it's very important that we have babies. Young people have babies. I've already had four.
Yes. Please?
But I did my share.
I love it. I totally agree. Right.
We are talking to Dr. Jamila Pomoja Thomas, and she wrote the book, The Evolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. And Jamila, do you have a poem that you wanted to recite?
by any chance, or?
Oh, wow. Do you want, okay, I certainly do. Let me pull up.
Oh, cool.
I'd love this. Thank you for asking this question.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, you're welcome. Don't forget, I'm a poet, too.
Yes.
So I was excited because we had that in common, and then you mentioned Maya Angelou, and I was like, oh my goodness, she's gonna love this. And I have someone in my family who's depressed. Pardon?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Well, the information about Maya Angelou, that made me very excited.
It was exciting.
You mentioned that someone in your family is depressed?
Yeah, so I see them, you know, and I pray for them all the time, but it's not something like even a person like me, you know, can do something about, because I know they need professional help, you know.
Yeah. I had to have professional help for mine. So I definitely understand. I want to read this one. This one is called Listening. This poem is called Listening. And it is in my book, The Evolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. It took me 24 years to learn to listen inner goddess in me. In a relationship that wasn't in alignment with my temple self, my higher self. Selfishly, I betrayed myself, blinded by the familiarity of conditions of comfort that set to beat me to conform to a self where weeds grew freely, suffocating the life in me to be, to rise, attempting murder to my divine self. Selfishly, I betrayed myself, dealt by the noises draining me to ASL, gestured language, finger spelling, philosophies, a paradigm foreign to me. Suctioning my first love of words as to genocide my beliefs, I expressed vocally, shh. That's how they wanted me to be. Pain I endured time after time. I then became the one beating myself in submission to a hierarchy that was never seen fit for me to be equally. Pain I willfully exchanged for the life of another, for the building of a foundation of another that, like my ancestors, pushed into non-existence. Without reparations to build a life for themselves, invisible, they stood in a land they built, unheard to a nation they built. Pain, unspeakable pain. It's okay. Today that pain pays me as I learn to listen to me. I've learned my pain was only written in my life to be a curriculum to teach. I've learned the attempt to murder the divine in me was a complete failure. I'm here selflessly to teach and reach individuals set on their path to higher self, magnetized by the energy soul frequency. I'm here, the divine feminine, listening to the goddess in me, experienced heights of ecstasy, of bliss, while simultaneously opening to the darkness and fears to reach the depth of me, the peak of higher me. I break open from the pain, push to catalyze me, combusting to the unknown me, finally listening to the goddess in me.
Oh, that's beautiful. And another You called it listening, and that's so important because listening is an art, and we hear lots of noises all the time, people don't bring themselves into a place, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes a day, and just get away from all the noise and meditate and forgive themselves and pray to a higher power or speak to a higher power and take deep breaths and exhale all the negativity. It's very important to do that because today we are so hooked on computers
on phones. Mm-hmm. We don't even see the environment anymore, let alone look deep into ourselves and listen to what's happening to us, right?
Right. That's so true. That is so true.
Yeah, so taking time for ourselves is not selfish. It is healthy. And it's healthy to be alone sometimes with no noise and just really reflecting on ourselves and trying to improve ourselves. And I think you have done that and you've worked on it, and I really commend you for it, because it is not easy for anyone else. You know, like I said, we all get depressed. It is not easy for other people to understand what is going on in your head and how to help you get rid of the negativity unless you help yourself, right?
Correct.
So
because
we can be...
people have different definitions of when someone is in need of help. And because of that, we have to be responsible for ourselves to truly get the help. And we have to also acknowledge that we really need the help.
Yeah. That's a hard thing to do.
It is. It is. But I can tell you, from me making those decisions to do that for myself, for me to make the decision to reclaim my life, reclaim my independence, it's gotten me to my evolution of myself, and I'm much more happy in life with being who I am. I don't feel confined.
That's an important statement, because a lot of people don't like themselves for whatever reason. And until they learn to like themselves and love themselves, how are they going to like other people without making rude comments to other people, because it's a reflection of how they're feeling?
Yeah.
And then
I went to the other
person.
I had an appointment prior to our interview earlier today, and a lady she was speaking with me, and she said, "Oh my gosh, you're just so gorgeous. You look so happy." And I said, "Well, I am happy. Thank you." And she said, "Oh my gosh, you have to be in love." I said, "Oh, absolutely." And she said, "Well, who is he?" I said, "Oh no, I'm in love with me."
That is a great way to end the interview. I love it. But now, Dr. J, and we should all follow suit. And now it is time for your time to shine, and you can tell our audience any message you like, and about your books, and how to if you have a website, or and how to get your book.
Okay, my advice to everyone out there listening on the radio is to make sure that you never lose sight of who you are. Never divorce you to be with another person. Always stay true to yourself. And you can reach me and order my book from Amazon, The Evolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. You look it up on Amazon, Dr. Jamila, Jamila, Pamoja, Pamoja, and then it's a hyphen, it's Thomas. And I also write novels, and so you could also find me under jblissbooks.com, jblissbooks.com. And so if you do a search between the two of those, it will help you to get to my new book, The Evolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. And I encourage all those out there that are trying to break free and get out of their rut to go give it a look. Go ahead and listen to something that's going to be helpful and nutrients for your soul.
That's fantastic. And I just want to encourage you to keep up the good work, and it's helping so many people by what you're doing, and writing and poetry, even if you just do it for yourself, is also a good healing for people. And I thank you so much for reciting your beautiful poem, listening to us. And I wish you much success and hope to have you back again.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jamila.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Dr. Jamila Pamoja Thomas has left the building, and I want you to get a copy of her book, The Evolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir. If you are not severely depressed, or you probably know someone, because in this day and age, there's a lot of people who are depressed. And even if you aren't severely depressed, but you do find yourself getting more depressed, this is a book for you, because, and for all of us, The Evolution of Me, a Poetic Memoir, because we all have human feelings, and we all sometimes need to get out of our rut and figure out how we can be happy and how we can like ourselves and love ourselves so we can make other people happy as well. And on that note, we're going to enter into the world of politics, and we're going to talk about disinformation, which in my opinion is a constitutional violation to have spies on, especially partisan spies, who actually have spewed disinformation and misinformation about incidents or events or people that they don't happen to favor. So on that note, we're going to take a break, and we will be back in just a moment. So don't touch that dial.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice. blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles, a live podcast adding the Justice Club, coming to Colombo Chronicles every day at 12 noon to 12:30. Grab a snack and a smoothie and sit back and find out what the lawyers don't want you to know. Be sure to push the like, follow, and share buttons, and bookmark blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up to Colombo Chronicles Live, because we're entering into the world of disinformation with the Biden czar, the disinformation czar, Jankiewicz, who James Hill, MD's doctor, newsletter says, funds over book by friend, celebrating inevitability of white genocide. With rabbis telling us Europeans and Americans will be annihilated through COVID strategies, harmful masking, mass migration, engineered food shortages, Noahide laws, it appears current leaders are moving apace with these plans. U.S. Disinformation Board head and anti-white critical race theory proponent Nina Jankiewicz effused praise for the book Cultural Warlords by her friend Tal Levin, who tweeted of raising a glass of farm-fresh cultured buttermilk to the inevitability of white genocide. Nina says, my friend Chicken Kiev's book on white supremacy online is available for pre-order. What Talia has shared of her book is remarkable, and I can't wait to get my hands on this baby in October. Culture Wars is the one reporter to
takes an immersive dive into white supremacy's explosive online presence. Jankowicz was appointed and glowingly endorsed by Homeland Security Director Alejandro Mayorkas, accused by U.S. Congress members of flooding America with illegal migrant criminals, primarily men, young healthy men. 70% are young healthy men, according to the statistics by the government, primarily men of fighting age with felony records, some on U.S. terrorist watch lists, while they are feminizing American men. Amazing, isn't it? So the only real male, I guess, we're going to have is if you if you marry a foreigner. Mayorkas refuses to tell congressional committees whether those on the terrorist watch list who were let into this country illegally are still roaming free in the United States. Well, let me tell you that the statistics prove that I had guessed 30 million illegals in the USA. And then Stanford came out with a statistical study that they had done a couple of weeks after, stated there were 29.5 million illegals in the USA. And the MSM media has stated since the 90s that there's 11 or 12 million. They really need to update their numbers. They really need to get down to the border when tens of thousands are invading into the USA. Oh, that was politically incorrect. Oh, disinformation. Illegally migrating into the USA. Illegal entrants are sent by secret plane or bus trips at taxpayers' expense. Under Mayorkas's command, it started with Obama and Biden back in 2009 with the open border policy. But it started way back under the George Bush administration when he was promoting the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR's North American Union, which is an open border policy, meaning that America would be a borderless country, which is a New World Order agenda, meaning that they would flood the United States with young, healthy males, I guess, and females who they would claim was their wives, and babies who they would claim were their babies or little children with no identification because they're open borders. And Obama changed detain and deport and vetting to detain and release. So there's no vetting, no background checks. They just walk in, and then the Democrats want to give them $1 billion in funding of our tax dollars for illegally entering into the USA while they skyrocket electricity, skyrocket gasoline, skyrocket food, skyrocket housing, mortgages, rents, and education. But foreigners get free education paid by you, the taxpayers. It's just kind of an upside down situation where they have shredded the United States Constitution, ignored it, trampled on it, put their big foot on it. It's just meaningless because when Obama took office, he said, with Biden as vice president, he said that they will make laws, which is unconstitutional as well, by executive order and mandate what we have to do in America, because he had a phone and a pen. And so he also said that Congress and the Constitution were meaningless at that point, and that's what he did. He wrote mandates and appears carrying on with the same agenda, which is unconstitutional because the presidents of the United States cannot use executive orders to alter, change, or rewrite or add new laws to the United States Constitution. And most of those mandates are not in line with the U.S. Constitution. And all laws in the United States must be in accordance with the U.S. Constitution and with the will of the majority of Americans. And they must also contain fairness and justice and equitability. They must contain common sense, morals, ethics, morals,
love cannot just be written by one man and the 339 million Americans told this is what you're going to do. You're going to be locked down indefinitely in your home, whether you're sick or not, whether you have any symptoms or not, you're still sick. Stay home. And you're not to touch your children or your husband or your family. You're not to hug or kiss. You're not to speak to anyone because everybody now is to distance until we tell you go outside, get some sunshine, go to the beach, go to the park. Even though you're healthy, we don't care. So now we're into disinformation. So it's kind of like the Chinese communist CCP party where they have the thought police. And that's where we're headed here. So if you have a thought, you better keep it to yourself because they have the disinformation police now with DHS that are going to spy on you when they're the ones who have been spewing disinformation since 2016, even prior to that. Like, let's talk about Benghazi. Let's talk about Afghanistan when our U.S. Navy SEALs were shot down in the middle of the night in an old chopper, and somehow those Afghanis found out and shot them down and murdered all of them. Let's talk about Fast and Furious that was swept away when hundreds of Americans and Mexican citizens were killed at the borders and the open borders by cartels. And now we have cartels and gangs and jihadists and terrorists and traffickers all coming into the USA because it's detain and release, not detain, vet, and deport as required by the Constitution. So it's a different world. Oh, dear. And this is endangering the lives of the American people, which is why we had the Constitution as the supreme laws of the land, and this is why it was a republic operating by the rule of law so that your children don't get kidnapped, or you. Maybe you're a young, pretty girl, so that you don't get kidnapped and trafficked, or maybe so that Epstein and his friends didn't traffic and kidnap you for 40 years without getting held accountable. So we go on and on here. So relatedly, Disinformation Governance Board leader Jennifer Daskow has been funded by George Soros, of course, who else, and worked as a Soros Open Society Institute fellow, which are anti-American organizations under the guise of 503C nonprofit organizations, which are considered charitable organizations. But when they're discriminatory and they're working against the American people, they aren't very charitable, are they? So anyway, relatedly, Disinformation Governance Board leader Jennifer Daskow has been funded by George Soros and worked as a Soros Open Society Institute fellow on issues related to privacy and law enforcement access to data across borders. There is a tweet that says, breaking official co-leading Biden disinfo board worked for George Soros, a member of President Joe Biden's Orwellian Disinformation Governance Board, has close ties to liberal billionaire activist George Soros. So we have all these conflicts of interest. We have George Soros controlling our speech now, freedom of speech, because these people have tons of money. I guess, you know, if you have tons of money, you can do just about anything, even buy a country. Migration and censorship strategies promoted by Levin, Jankiewicz, Daskow, Soros, and Mayorkas have the effect of displacing Americans through migrant violence and drug trafficking. So they are allowing fentanyl to come in from China through the open borders and through the ports. After all, it was Bill Clinton who was going to give the Long Beach Naval Base and the port to the Chinese president at the time in the 90s, who actually committed a genocide against his own people. And then they threatened to blow Los Angeles off the face of the map in 1993. And now they're threatening America again, and they're threatening Taiwan. And it's my opinion, but don't tell anyone, that they're threatening Taiwan because Taiwan makes more microchips, more chips than China, and they distribute those chips around the world. And we know China wants control of everything, including us, believe it or not. And so that's a real serious problem for me. I don't know about you. Moreover, these policies lead to reduced social cohesion, high levels of pubic assistance and greater family support and fertility for illegal migrants than citizens have, and the inability for Americans to discuss what's happening to them or who is behind it. Well, open borders is no, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that the open borders have been bringing in drugs into the inner cities where the poor kids are, the blacks, the Hispanics, and the poor whites. And because they're poor, they are more apt to sell drugs and guns, illegal guns that they're smuggling into the USA. And the government knows this. It's been going on for years and years and for decades, and it's only gotten worse. So now we have the opioids, we have the cocaine, we have marijuana, we have all this candy, you know, fentanyl, which is the biggie now. I mean, it all keeps getting bigger and bigger. And we have all these poor kids taking the blame for the drug trafficking who get caught, and they're the ones who either die or end up going to jail, but not the big guys. They don't go to jail. They don't go to prison, just the little guys. So they're destroying the minds of the young people in this country is what the plan is, to destroy the minds of the young people, to confuse them about their gender, because God, I guess, they don't think God knew what he was doing when these babies were born, or the doctors and the parents and the staff who identified the gender of a baby. So now these billionaires decide that they are in control of your children in taxpayer-funded public schools, and that we need to reduce the population of the planet, which abortion and same-sex and trannies and transhumans does to America and the world, if it's to go that far, reduces the population of the planet. And when you reduce the population of babies born in countries, sovereign nations, then you are going to exterminate that race or that ethnicity over time by attrition, by pushing abortions, like China mandated abortions, not taxpayer-funded mandated abortions, but mandated abortions, and 40 million baby girls were slaughtered on abortion tables over 40 years. 70 million babies have been slaughtered in America since 1973. The sanctity of life and the sanctity of mother is not being upheld by the left in the United States of America. And the question is, why isn't the world asking, why are they having a war on babies and God? Well, that's all I have time for. So be careful what you say, because apparently freedom of speech is going down the tubes in America. Unless you stand up, fight back legally, peacefully, constitutionally, contact your representatives and tell them to stand up for freedom of speech.
Well, my friends, time flies. And now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Columbo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.